Matthew 22. So let me see. We covered the wedding banquet, and we covered paying taxes to Caesar. Hopefully you all paid your taxes. And let's jump to verse 34. Verse 34. The heading is the greatest commandment. Hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question: "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" And Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it: love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments." So the thousands of commandments in the Old Testament can be summarized, can come under one of those two great commandments of loving the Lord your God with your whole heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Turn to, put your bulletin in Matthew 22 and turn to Mark 12. Now this is going to get complex because you're going to eventually have three sections. Mark chapter 12. Kind of a similar passage, Mark 12, starting in verse 28. One of the teachers of the law came and heard them debating. Noticing that Jesus had given them a good answer, he asked them, "Of all the commandments, which is the most important?" "The most important one," answered Jesus. And he is now going to quote out of Deuteronomy chapter 6, which we're going to look at in a second. Is this, here is the most important commandment: "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this: love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these." Now, I want you to hold that section, and now turn to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6, because that is where Jesus is quoting from. Deuteronomy 6, because I want you to notice that Jesus changes something. And he's allowed to, since he's the author of the Bible. And so Deuteronomy 6, starting in verse 4. And this is kind of where Jesus is quoting from. So Deuteronomy 6, verse 4. And I want you to see if you can pick up what is different. What did he change from Deuteronomy 6 to Mark chapter 12? So verse 4 in Deuteronomy 6. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your," what? "Heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength." Okay, so love the Lord your God with what? Heart, soul, strength. Now look back at Mark. What's different in Mark? What did he add? Mind, okay? So I want you to keep that in mind, that he does add mind. So love the Lord your God with your whole heart, soul, mind, and strength. And so I want to talk about our love of God and this great commandment. We are to love the Lord with all of our heart. The heart is your emotions. And so we are to love God with our emotions, with our, that love when you fall in love with someone. The heart is the seat of our emotions. Have you ever grieved and it feels like your heart is literally breaking? Heart is where we have emotions and we express our love, our emotional love towards God. And we are to love the Lord our God with all of our heart, with all of our emotions. I like 1 Thessalonians because this kind of reminds me of a way to love God with my heart. "Rejoice always, pray without ceasing, and everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus. So one of the ways I think that we should can express our love emotionally to God is to worship him, to rejoice, to just be praising the Lord, to be listening to Christian music in the car and at home and just worshiping the Lord with all of our heart and to be giving him thanks in everything. Constantly thank you for this, no matter what happens, giving thanks for the good and the bad, and to pray, to just talk to him and spend time in worship. So that's loving God with all of our heart. And I know this is radical, but you know, when I gave my heart to the Lord after about 4 or 5 years after I gave my heart to the Lord, I shot up all my secular albums. Back then, the CDs were this big. They were black. And I shot them up with a, I haven't shot many times, but I shot them up with a gun and all that. Because I wanted to, it's just for me, I just wanted to love God. Now I have actually this much of Christian albums that I love playing from the 70s. And I put them down, I put them on my record player. But I just love singing Christian music. It's like, why do I need any other music? Just worshiping God from all of my heart. Number two, love the Lord with your soul, with all of your soul. Now, the soul, now, just so you understand, mind, in Jewish thinking, mind is under soul. So for whatever reason, which I'll get to in a second, Jesus pulls mind out of soul because he wanted to emphasize that. But for a Jewish person to say, I love God with my heart, whole heart, soul, and strength, soul would include mind. Soul would be mind. Soul is your will, your character, is the control center of your life. But by pulling mind out of it, then soul mainly becomes your will. Your will to decide to love God. So it is your soul and the will that decides, I'm going to be faithful to God. It's a decision. I'm going to follow the Lord. I'm going to obey the Lord, his commandments. So there's lots of books out on married life that all have this emphasis that love is a decision of the will, that love isn't emotions, it's a decision of the will. And so I picked just a couple examples from different Christian books. Love is an unconditional commitment to an imperfect person. To love somebody isn't just a strong feeling, it is a decision, a judgment, and a promise. The world says love is a feeling. God says love is a decision. Okay, that's on top of a book. Love is a decision, not an emotion. And I'm not kidding. There's tons of books that tell you that love is a decision. It's not your feelings and your emotion. You have to understand, I disagree with that, okay? Because I think love is all four of these things. Imagine, and let me just explain why I believe that. Imagine I just met my wife, and we've been dating for a year. And we, of course, have feelings and emotions for each other, and we love each other. But after a year, we're going to get married, and my wife says to me the night before we get married, she says, do you still love me with all of your heart? And I go to her, I really don't have any feelings for you, but I've made a decision to love you with my will. I have decided, we're going to get married tomorrow, that I'm going to be a faithful husband, and I'm going to care for you, and I'm going to respect you, and I've made the decision to be your husband, okay? What do you think? She'd be excited to marry me, right? So that's why I like, whoa, I think it's both a decision and an emotion. Love the Lord with all of your mind, with all of your mind. So look back in Matthew 22, in Matthew chapter 22. Love the Lord with all of your intellect. Matthew chapter 22. Some believe that Jesus pulled that out of soul because he wanted to emphasize that you need to love God with your intellect. And the way to love God with your intellect is to know God. Philippians 3:10, Paul says, the three greatest things is to know Jesus Christ and to know the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of sharing in his sufferings. So to love someone with your mind is to love someone with their intellect. It's to want to know them. Now, the reason we believe Jesus pulled mind out, if you back up to verse 29, they were trying to trap him with a weird scenario about a woman who gets married to seven different brothers. They all die. And then who's she going to be married to in the resurrection? Verse 29, Jesus replied, "You are in error because you do not know," what? "The scriptures or the power of God." Now, I don't have time because we just don't have time. But I cannot tell you how often Jesus says to the religious leaders, "You don't know the scriptures. You don't know the Bible." Because in order to love someone, you have to intellectually know who they are. And Jesus is constantly, you don't know God because you don't know the scriptures. You don't know the Bible. It would be as if I said to you, "Hey, look, I just met Robin yesterday. We're madly in love. My emotions, my heart is like love at first sight. I'm willing my soul to make a commitment of my will to marry her. We just met yesterday. We want to get married tomorrow." But what would you say to me if I told you that? You would say, "You don't even know her," right? I need to know. In order to love someone, you need to know who they are. So that's why you date, so that you get to know who the person is that you are to love. And it's funny. I mean, I enjoy getting to know my wife. And just when I got it figured out, she usually changes. And then I'm on a new intellectual, journey to try to figure out. See, some guys have to constantly marry different women. My wife just changes. And so every 5 years, she's a new woman. In order to love God, if you're going to love God, then you need to know his character. You need to know what he's like. You need to know how he thinks, what he's done in the past, what he's going to do in the future. And the only way we can know that is intellectually through studying the scriptures. And so that's why Jesus, we believe that's why he pulled mind out of soul, is because the religious people didn't even read their own Bibles. And I wonder how many Christians are loving God with all of their mind, which means you're in the Bible every day so that you not only love God with your heart, you not only love God with your will, but you love God with your mind because you know what he's like. And what I find fascinating in the 39 years I've been walking with the Lord is that you're always learning new things about God and who he is. It's amazing. Love the Lord with all your strength. And this speaks of serving the church. This talks about us physically serving in our ministries, using our spiritual gifts, our talents, serving the church in some fashion. I guess the best way to working for Christ, serving God is the greatest adventure in the world. See, these four things, I think, is the definition of agape love. And I think a marriage is a perfect example of the way this should work. Because Paul says marriage is just a symbol of our love for Christ. So I'm emotionally in love with my wife. It's been 33 years. And I emotionally am more in love with her over those 33 years. Now, I know maybe some of you go, "Oh, our emotion's gone, Pastor." I just think it should grow. If you're both spirit-filled, that your love for each other emotionally deepens and widens. So I don't know. I have to talk to people that are that have been married 50 years and see where they're at. Although I've been at enough funerals when a spouse that's been married over 50 years loses a spouse, and man, talk about emotions and devastation and connection and oneness and I want to love my wife with my will. I'm choosing to be faithful to you. I'm choosing to be by your side. I'm choosing together we'll parent our six kids and grandchildren. And then I intellectually want to love my wife. I want to find out, what does my wife like? What does she love? What doesn't she like? And so I want to know who she is, and I like talking to her, and how you think about ministry in the church, and what's your thoughts on this? And so intellectually, we're talking back and forth, and I'm getting to know her. I haven't figured it out yet. And obviously, I know a lot about my wife. And I want to serve her. I want to serve. I want to be there. So I want to close with Revelation chapter 2, and you don't have to turn there. I'll quote it to you. In Revelation chapter 2, Jesus is writing the church. And he says, hey, he compliments them a little bit. And then he says, I've got a problem, church. He says, you have forsaken your first love. He says, I want you to remember how you used to be in love with me. And you need to repent. And you need to do the things you did at first. So I believe that every time we talk about revival, what you're really talking about is falling in love with God again. That's how you get revival, is to fall in love with God again. When you put R-E in front of a word, it means again. So energize, re-energize means it once was energized, but again, it needs to be re-energized. Redo means you did it once and you're going to do it again. Revival, someone has said, revival means you're alive in God. Someone says you can't have revival if you never were alive for God to begin with. But for those of us that you can remember the days you really loved God and you were serving him and you loved him with all your heart and you couldn't get enough worship and you were in the Bible every day, every morning, every evening, you're praying to God all day long, this is for us. We had revival. Revival means to fall in love with Jesus again, to love him with your whole heart, your whole soul, your whole mind, and your whole strength. It is not to love him, okay, I'm going to love God with half my heart, one quarter of my soul. I want to open the altar. And I want to invite you, if you need personal revival, you know your love for God has kind of gone cold. If Jesus were here, he'd say, man, you're not loving me with all of your being like you used to. I want to open up the altars and have you come here because we'll serve you communion up here, okay? I want to pray for you, so let's stand. And if you're here this morning and you need some personal, like there's an area in your life. You need all four areas. That's what I want to say. I know there's some Christians that go, oh, no, I just worship God with my intellect. I'm not an emotional person. Sorry. It's love God with your whole heart. And then there's other people, I'm into worship. I don't get into the word too much. Sorry, it's love God with your whole mind, with your whole will. So if you need some personal revival to your love for the Lord, I want to invite you to come as we sing and come to the altar. And then we'll serve you communion up here. You come.